Okay, so welcome back, everybody. It is 2 minutes after noon Central Time. And our last speakers for the day is Jeff and Dee from Southern California. And when it comes to PR presentation to parolees transitioning from prisons, these two people are the subject matter experts, and they have agreed to share their experience, strength, and hope today with our region in hopes that this inspires somebody here who is attending to think or to say that this is a service that our region should prioritize as a project. All right, go ahead.
Dee, can you stop sharing for 1 second so that I can expand my? Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
So, good morning, everybody. Before we get started, guys, I think that you all have been at these screens all morning, and I think that's amazing. Can we just take a minute to break up the flow a little bit with the Serenity Prayer, and maybe everybody could unmute and we could do it together? At one person.
There's a couple more.
Right. So let's just take a moment of silence, kind of refocus, and then the Serenity Prayer, please. Thanks, everyone. God, grant me the serenity.
Grant us serenity.
Accept the things
to accept the things that we cannot change.
Change the
courage
things
to
change the things that we
can.
And the will to know the difference. Just for today.
Thank you so much. So let me just move you guys a little bit over on my screen. So good morning. My name's Dee, and I'm a recovering addict.
And I'm an addict named Jeff. We want to make sure not to forget that we want to thank the Regional Assembly for inviting us here today.
Thank you guys for coming.
Absolutely. So we're joining you from the Southern California region where it's unseasonably chilly this morning. I think it was only 57 when I woke up. So yeah, it's pretty cold. And we're going to share some experience with you on a PR project that we have been a part of. Before we do that, Jeff has a question.
Do I? Okay. Well, I guess my question is, have any of you been involved in H&I service? If you could somehow indicate that. I see a couple of hands.
Raise hands or just
reactions.
Shout
There's
out.
A few. Okay. Well, let me ask you if you have ever had any experience in particular with a reentry population, people who are just coming out of prisons, just coming out of jails, just coming out of treatment centers, because that's the population that we're really addressing with the project that we're going to be talking about today. I guess Mikey's sort of indicating, so yeah, and Deborah says yes. Okay. Well, we just wanted to kind of let you know what we're going to be talking about in general. So I'm going to turn it back over to Dee now.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, and this is a population, you know, you guys were doing your planning activity when we came in, and, you know, you're talking about places where meetings aren't even being held. And this is a population that a lot of us forget about, or that just we just don't have a lot of focused services for. So our goals today are pretty simple. We want to define what a presentation slash meeting is, a presentation meeting, because this is what we are going to be talking about today. It's a virtual parolee meeting that we hold on a weekly basis. So we're going to tell you about that presentation meeting. We're going to explain how the virtual parolee presentation meeting got started and some of the challenges we've had. And then we'll also offer some thoughts and considerations for you at the end about what you might want to think about if you were going to be doing this yourselves. So the presentation meeting is kind of a hybrid format. It's a service event coordinated by a service body, but it's a cross between a public relations presentation and a demonstration recovery meeting, like those that are sometimes held as a part of a PR effort. And then there's a third sort of obvious thing you'll see, which is that, you know, an actual recovery meeting mixes its way in there too. However, it's not a regular recovery meeting and it's not open for anyone to attend. The parolees who do participate can attend outside meetings. So it's not an H&I meeting or panel technically, even though it resembles that in many ways too. But we believe the first presentation meeting format like this was used in the 1990s when the drug courts were established and NA had to deal with the influx of participants from those drug courts and how to accommodate them and welcome them. And a couple other examples, sometimes newcomer workshops would be kind of like this format. And we also know of some meetings in Northern California that are held for foster children whose parents want them to have access to 12-step recovery, but they don't want to send their kids, they're not comfortable sending their kids to like to NA meetings. So for our region, a presentation meeting generally has these four characteristics. They're a PR service project conducted using public relations guidelines. They're for a group of addicts or potential NA members with particular common needs. They're designed to introduce the target audience to NA, and they provide information about transitioning to regular NA meetings and actually place kind of an emphasis on that aspect of it. So the Southern California Virtual Parolee Meeting is an amazing collaboration, to be honest, between the SoCal region's Public Relations Committee and the California Division of Parole, Southern Division. So it's a really interesting combination of efforts. In terms of, you know, like what it means to everybody who's involved, from parole's perspective, the presentation meeting is conducted by what they call a recognized community-based service group. And that's NA, which has a viable program of recovery from addiction, and it satisfies requirements of some of the courts and or parole boards. So there might be other community-based support groups that parolees are also involved with, but this one in particular is to deal with that drug addiction issue, which of course we're quite qualified to deal with. And because it's virtual, NA provides the infrastructure and resources to coordinate the meeting, which means the parole staffing needed is pretty minimal. From the parolee's perspective, my next screen up here, it's a virtual meeting that's put on just for them, and it allows an extra level of identification for them. The meeting provides information and support to help them transition to regular NA meetings. And it's also important to them because it satisfies one of the conditions of their parole. And then from NA's perspective, this is an ongoing PR project. It's a great way to develop, maintain, and strengthen NA's relationship with the Department of Corrections. It's an opportunity to attract and educate new NA members about our message and program, and we're able to encourage and support them in their recovery on an ongoing basis. Jeff and I both think it's also one of the most amazing ways to get to hear great speakers every week. So kind of cool. So let's switch over and let Jeff fill you in on the next part.
So we see this project as a win-win-win. because the Southern California Virtual Parolee Meeting, stop texting me, excuse me. The Southern California Virtual Parolee Presentation Meeting satisfies all three parties involved. Parole gets to serve its clients with minimal demands on its staff resources. It helps parolees meet a requirement for, you know, that's a condition of their parole, in a safe and friendly environment. And most importantly, for those of us in Narcotics Anonymous, it allows us to carry the NA message directly to a specific population through a PR project, which is not that common. Getting this project off the ground in Southern California, we had a head start because our PR committee already had a relationship with parole. Pre-pandemic, parole offices in Southern California were putting on monthly PACT meetings, P-A-C-T, which stands for Parole and Community Together. These meetings are re-entry events where NA and other community organizations provide new information to newly released parolees. It's sort of like a job fair or a health fair. And before the pandemic shutdown, we were providing in-person presentation meetings at three of these PACT events. When the pandemic hit, we asked the LA parole office if they'd be interested in a virtual presentation meeting. Like, you know, because all the meetings went on Zoom, we go, maybe we make this go on Zoom. And they agreed immediately. They said, yes, that would be awesome. So the community relations coordinator, who's a member of the regional PR committee, gathered some other NA members together to brainstorm and plan the project. Now, we still needed to get the approval of our regional PR committee. As some of you may have experienced, sometimes NA service committees do not move quickly. Some members had sixth tradition concerns. Would we be affiliating with, endorsing, or lending the NA name to parole? Ultimately, we reached consensus that our work with parole would be cooperation, not affiliation. The PR committee unanimously approved the project, and we set about putting our plans into action. As I said, our groups were already using Zoom, and since we were familiar with it, we decided that that's the platform that we would use for our virtual presentation meeting. Our basic Zoom account allowed for 100 participants, and parole anticipated that some 50 parolees would be participating, so we were good to go on that front. One of our goals was to introduce parolees to Narcotics Anonymous and to NA meetings. So we decided on some standard readings and a speaker participation format that also left time for parolees to share and ask questions. Most of the participating parolees are men, but there are also some women. So we have one male and one female speaker each week who share for about 15 to 20 minutes per person. We next assembled a team of volunteers. For 50 parolees, we needed three or four people to manage the meeting. And then we began reaching out to find speakers to share at our meetings. Due to the pandemic, we were able to call on many NA members who otherwise probably would not have been available. The virtual format allows us to schedule speakers from here in Southern California and from around the world. In fact, we're always trolling for speakers, so we will be collecting the contact information for each and every one of you at the end of our presentation today. Just kidding. But of course, if any of you are interested, please let us know. And I can tell you that a couple of the earlier presenters, Wilvina and Craig, have both been speakers at our parolee meeting. Anyway, we had almost everything worked out. There was just one other challenge to solve.
So the trickiest challenge was figuring out a way for parole to verify parolees' attendance at the meetings. When we were doing this in person, we were doing it at their parole offices. So parole staff, you know, had a sign-in sheet or whatever they used to track the parolees' attendance. Of course, we don't take attendance at NA meetings, so it didn't seem appropriate for our NA trusted servants to do that here either. The solution we came to was to have parole agents join the call after the NA meeting portion ended. so that they could take the attendance. That was a great idea, but another challenge was the California Parole Department wouldn't allow the parole service associates who were going to do this to connect to the meeting via the internet. They would only allow them to connect by phone. That meant they only had audio. They couldn't visualize and see the parolees. They didn't have the ability to mute and unmute the parolees to take attendance. So we used what we had available, and we set up Zoom breakout rooms with a parole service associate and an NA volunteer in each room. The NA volunteer calls on and unmutes each parolee to state their corrections ID number, and then the parole service associate repeats the number to verify it. So things were well underway. We started out with 48 parolees from two Southern California counties at the first meeting, which was held Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2020 at 10 a.m. Pacific time. The effort was so successful that all of the other Southern California County parole offices started sending their parolees to the meetings too. After 6 weeks, because the attendance had increased so much, we added a second weekly meeting on Thursday nights. Today, between the two meetings, Tuesday morning and Thursday night, we serve more than 500 parolees each week. Pretty amazing. And we use 4 breakout rooms per meeting to take attendance. With all this growth, the attendance process was taking a very long time. So as parolees became more familiar with Zoom, we invited those who could to enter their correction ID numbers in chat. And this has saved a lot of time. We've made other changes over the course of time as we've gone on the past 13 months. As Jeff mentioned, our Zoom account allowed for only 100 participants per meeting, and serving 500 parolees per week does not mean you can fit all of them into a room with 100 slots. So we upgraded our account to accommodate the higher attendance, and that's been good for us. I think there might've been a couple of times when the Thursday night meeting like exceeded that. I think I heard that. Second, because the parole offices that we were serving, some of them were outside of our region's geographic boundaries. So we reached out to surrounding NA regions to let them know what we were doing and invite them to join the effort. As it turned out, the other regions weren't interested or were unable to participate. So the SoCal PR committee has continued coordinating the project. And then another key to managing growth was recruiting volunteers. Again, as Jeff mentioned, when we started out, we only needed 3 or 4 trusted servants per meeting. But between the Tuesday morning and Thursday night meetings, we now have about 16 trained trusted servants. We don't need all 16 per meeting, or we don't need 8 per meeting, but we like to have like a bank of folks trained and available so we have them as they're needed. And finally, our PR committee officially approved the project and established, you know, ways to track everything and document everything, and designated the project coordinator, which is the community relations coordinator of our PR committee. So back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Dee. Before I go on, I want to mention a couple things. When we say that we serve more than 500 parolees each week between the two meetings, some of the parolees attend both the Tuesday morning and the Thursday night meeting. So, you know, that number's a little artificially inflated, but ultimately we don't see that as a bad thing. If somebody's attending 2 meetings a week instead of 1, we view that as good. And the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, about these volunteers. I mean, we have Dee and I handle the Tuesday morning meeting, and we have like a team of about 8. And it's rare that all 8 are there on any one Tuesday. You know, somebody needs to take a day off, or they're going on vacation, or they're sick or whatever. But we feel like 8 is plenty that, you know, no matter what happens, we'll have the bare minimum, which really is about 5 is really necessary. We could do it with less, but it wouldn't be ideal. So anyway, now we're going to talk about, you know, if you wanted to start a presentation meeting like this in your region, what you need to have is a relationship with the Department of Corrections or parole, if you don't already have one. If you don't already have one, you're going to need to reach out and make that connection. You may want to provide some, you know, standard public relations literature that we use in NA, like the pamphlets, information about, you know, NA, information about like, no, it's just information about NA, the NA membership survey and the pamphlet NA, a resource in your community. Those pamphlets explain what NA is, what we do, and how we can serve the community. So they're a good thing to provide when you're making initial contacts. When you propose the idea of this presentation meeting to your regional PR committee or the regional service committee, it might be the first time that members in your area or region have heard about this type of a PR event. So be sure to allow time for them to, you know, understand the concept. And please don't hesitate to contact us for support if we can be of help. We have found this project to be overwhelmingly successful, and we'd be delighted to help anyone else that's interested get similar projects off the ground. The technical limitations of the parolees is an important consideration. In our experience, many of them will be on landline telephones. Some of them, because they are restricted from actual internet access as a condition of their parole due to having committed internet crimes, hacking, or what have you. Remember, this population has been incarcerated, and many of them are just getting used to using cell phones. Many of them will not have video displays, which limits their ability to see the NA readings on the screen. We have tried to get literature into their hands by working with our regional H&I committee, which sent $1,000 worth of literature to 10 different parole offices for us. And though the pandemic has complicated getting that literature distributed by the agents to the parolees, it is a process that is happening. And we're hoping that even people on landline phones can, you know, have a little white book and read, you know, who's an addict or how it works for us when the time comes during a meeting.
We also let them know where they can access NA literature online.
Yeah, we do that as well. Did I fail to say that? I'm sorry. Thank you, Dee.
I think we just didn't mention it.
That's okay. Yeah, we give them, you know, NA.org and tell them how to, you know, go to where all the IPs and booklets are there so that they can access, if they have access to a computer and the internet, of course. Anyway, we're going to talk about the parole staffing now. The line of communication between the regional PR committee and parole is especially important. We have one parole service associate who acts as the liaison to NA, and our PR community relations coordinator, or CRC, is the liaison to parole. This keeps communication from parole to NA and from NA to parole clear and effective. We have also found it helpful to educate the parole staff a little bit about NA's traditions, especially traditions 6 and 10. It's important for them to know and understand what NA does and what NA does not do, and how we can best work together to serve the parolees. For NA, staffing is also a crucial element. The community relations coordinator is the single point of accountability for this project and reports directly to the PR committee at region. The CRC ensures that the parole staff participating in the project is informed about NA traditions and what NA does and doesn't do. The community relations coordinator fields questions or ideas from the meeting coordinators, like Dee and myself, and the parole liaison, and is responsible for the presentation meeting being conducted, you know, appropriately. The people are showing up, that it's happening the way it's supposed to happen. We have two presentation meetings each week for parolees, and each has its own set of trusted servants. Our meeting coordinator acts as the Zoom host, schedule speakers, and ensures that there are enough trusted servants each week. other specific tasks are handled by different trusted servers. One is the meeting leader, another handles the screen sharing, and someone else takes care of admitting and renaming attendees. And that's important, and you may not, you know, understand what that is exactly when I say that, but many of the parolees, as I said, enter the meeting on a landline, which is a phone number, which is fine. But a lot of them also use cell phones, and they don't like rename themselves like Jeff W or DJ or Wilvina. You know, it's like they come in with the name of their device, like iPhone or Alcatel or Galaxy. And it doesn't help for us to have 10 people named iPhone when we're trying to, when the parole agents are trying to take attendance later on. So we have someone who admits people and then as needed renames them. So it's iPhone 1, iPhone 2, iPhone 3. So there's just a little bit of a distinction there. And that same person also admits and renames the parole service associate when they arrive. The PSAs, the parole service associates join the call at or near the end of the meeting. And we keep them in the breakout, in the waiting room until the meeting is over. But when they're, and you can't rename them, unfortunately, Zoom technology won't allow it at this point, in the waiting room. We have to wait till they're actually in the actual Zoom meeting. So they come in, and they come in with their telephone numbers because, as we said before, parole won't let them use the internet. So they come in on a cell phone number. So we have to rename them, Agent Evans, Agent Harvey, Agent Jackson, Agent Mata, so that we can identify them and assign them to breakout rooms. One trusted servant is needed for each of the breakout rooms for attendance. During the meeting, all the trusted servants monitor audio and visual. We mute people as needed and sometimes stop a video if it's distracting or inappropriate. When parole service associates join the call, we keep them in the waiting room until the recovery meeting is over, and we assure parolees several times during the meeting that there's no one from parole on the call at that point, so that they're encouraged to share freely and openly. Once the meeting is over, the host sends 40 or 50 parolees, one trusted servant, and one parole service associate to each of the breakout rooms. One of the parole agents stays in the main room with the NA host and the parolees who are able to use the chat function. And it's at that point the parolees enter their last names and corrections ID numbers in the chat and then leave the meeting. There's always a few parolees in the main room who are unable to chat for one reason or another, and their names and numbers are taken verbally, just like in the breakout rooms. Altogether, all the breakout rooms in the main room, the attendance process usually takes about 15 to 20 minutes. And at the parole office, the names and numbers that they've collected are presumably entered and then distributed. The information is, you know, it's data entry and then it's distributed to the specific parole agents. So there you go, Dee.
Okay. So if you're thinking about doing something like this, it's probably important to consider a lot of things, but these are just a couple of questions that we came up with. First, is there an existing relationship with parole? If so, this could be a great way to expand and strengthen that relationship. And if not, it might be a perfect entry point to develop the relationship to get it started. I think another thing to consider is how could the service benefit your region? Besides the obvious benefit of strengthening that relationship with parole or corrections, it could be worth thinking about how or if this group of potential members is being served now. Some of these folks got clean on the inside, and this is a solid way to help them maintain their clean time and transition to NA on the outside. And, you know, some of the folks in these meetings don't think they need to be there at all. Some of them, you know, are just getting clean or just kind of looking at whether this could be an issue for them. So it's a great way to serve that population.
And also we should mention there's a few of these parolees that actually have some clean time under their belt because H&I reached them while they were inside and they got clean behind the walls. So there's that population too.
Yeah. And there's a few of them within that population that have decades clean on the inside. So they're a real treat to have in the meetings because they are, you know, they have some great experience to share. So another thing is whether or not this project could attract more members to service. What we've found is that a lot of our volunteers aren't necessarily plugged into the service system in other ways. They're able and willing to commit to this limited amount of time to a weekly meeting or to doing the meeting a couple times a month, but they may not be willing otherwise to, you know, serve on a committee and have to be there every single month or that kind of thing. And most of them bring some really great specific skills to the table that wouldn't be used anywhere else in service otherwise. So it's a great way to tap into those resources. And human resources are key, but technical and financial resources are also needed. So, you know, we need people to with technical skills to run the meetings and of course funding to cover the meeting expenses like the Zoom subscription.
So Dee and I want to, again, thank the Regional Assembly for inviting us. We're here. We'll be happy to answer any questions. Other Southern California Public Relations Trusted Servants are also available to help get something like this started. Please feel free to contact Dee or me or email directly the PR Committee in Southern California at publicinfo@todayna.org. Our regional website is todayna.org. And if you put publicinfo@ the beginning, that's the PR committee, publicinfo@todayna.org.
And that's it from us. I just put my email address in chat. I'm not sure if Jeff's going to do that or not, but if you do want to contact us directly instead of the PR committee, we're, you know, we're happy to answer questions or do whatever we can do to help.
Well, and curiously, my choices for chat are either Kelly or you. It was Craig previously. Oh. I don't have everyone as an option somehow because I guess I'm not a co-host.
I think that I do because I'm a co-host to be able to share. Oh, so
somebody just gave me access, probably Kelly.
All right. Okay. And I'm going to stop sharing so that we can take some questions or just talk through any ideas that you have. And the crowd goes wild.
The crowd goes wild. All right. Well, Vina has a question.
Hey, you guys. Great to see you, Dee and Jeff. So here in New York, we've done several presentations to parole, and their response to us is Narcotics Anonymous isn't evidence-based. Now, that being said, you guys have been doing this now for almost a full year.
While
you guys don't take statistics, does the Parole Office of Southern California have any recidivism statistics regarding attendance with Narcotics Anonymous virtual parole meetings? Have you asked them, and can you make any of this available that we could then use to present to our Department of Probation?
I think the question or the answer is we don't know if they're doing, if they're tracking. I'm sure they're tracking like attendance numbers, whether they're connecting that to recidivism or not, we could find out. And if they are doing anything, I think they would be really happy to share information because they've been really pleased with the whole process. I mean, even now as things are starting to open up, our liaison is talking about not discontinuing the virtual meeting, but keeping it going because it's something that's so easily accessible for their clients.
Yeah, that would make all the difference for us to be able to provide statistics like that. And
yeah,
you know
I just had a thought, you know, during Wolvina's presentation, she talked about a national, how'd you characterize it? National presence?
Yes.
Right. And one of the benefits of something like that, of a multi-zone representation. Sorry, I didn't use the word R word there. Sorry, but would be the ability for a multi-zone PR for professionals, right? And that would be a form where the California parole professionals would present their experience with this effort. And then if the parole professionals from New York were present as professionals, they would be hearing this from other professionals. So although it doesn't match the evidence-based paradigm that they're looking for, they would be hearing from their own peers the success, what they perceive to be the success of this program or the benefit of this program to their people transitioning. I was just a thought I had.
Yeah, no, that's a good thought. And I want to weigh in and say, while Wilvina and others are working on some national kind of program, you know, I mean, last year, and I think again this year, we're probably planning to do the same thing. We invited Tracy Harvey or Jennifer Swoboda, who's actually the supervising agent, to our presentation at WSLD. I mean, it was Lee and Kareem that did that presentation, but they had the parole, the professional there. And, you know, Wilvina, last year, you know, we went to your Northeast Zone Forum. The corrections event was spectacular. I thought it was awesome. I mean, we could probably do a similar thing without having to involve everyone else. We can invite our local professionals to, you know, attend another event in New York with you. That's something that we could try to do. But I just would echo D that no, we don't have that information that you initially asked for. We haven't asked for it, but we certainly can. They're not going to be able to come up with statistics with respect to, I'll call it relapse, you know, for lack of a better word, but, you know, drug use, but recidivism, you know, they must have statistics available for that. So, you know, maybe we can get some information for you. We'll see what we can come up with.
Yeah, the New Jersey Drug Court collected those for us. They mandate their drug court attendees to like 3 NA meetings a week going out 5 years. So they did have, they had statistics of the overall recidivism, and then they also had statistics of the drug court attendees like next to that in terms of program retention with the meetings versus without the meetings. So, you know, that's like, those things are gold, obviously, from a PR perspective and presenting to other places, especially since they, that's like their go-to criticism of our fellowship.
Yeah, I know that's, we're all running into that. Oh, we want evidence-based, you know, programs and stuff. And so
I'm assuming you use the membership survey with them, and that's just not quite the data that they're looking for.
Yeah, you know what? I guess in terms of justifying their program and policy initiatives, they can't use those statistics to justify their program efforts, but those they could.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, other questions, ideas, thoughts?
Phone lines are now open.
Oh my goodness. Oh, Harold, you're breaking up a little bit.
Well, he's still muted. It looks can you unmute him?
There you go.
Am I okay now?
Yes. Yeah, our caller, okay. Harold.
Yeah. Okay, so, Wilvina, I going back to what you were sharing on, and it is in relation to what they're doing, and we were talking about data collection, right? And I was thinking about... you say that they're mandated for the...
Your internet connection is bad, Harold.
You froze.
All right, I guess he'll come back. Oh, here's Rhonda. John, go ahead. John, our caller, John, AD.
So good afternoon, Jeff and Dee, and I thank you for your presentation. And here I'm here in Mobile, and this has been a very, very informative workshop. Supposed to be for GSRs, but I noticed in my area that there's a lot more we could be doing as opposed to just going to our regular local meetings. So I was wondering, like, how would you start the conversation with, you know, and I guess this goes to Wavina as well. How would you even start the conversation to bring Narcotics Anonymous into those systems, into those drug courts, to the parole officers? You know, what, like, how would you even begin that process?
I had the same question too. Go ahead. Well,
John, does your area have a PR or a PI committee?
No, we don't.
Okay. Or outreach or fellowship? Pardon? I'm sorry, say that again?
We only have Harold, who's our vice chair of the region.
Okay, so you have the Harold committee.
Yes.
I've heard of other committees like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just general PR basics would mean that, you know, you want to provide some information to corrections or parole, whoever you're reaching out to. And maybe, you know, maybe that starts out as a letter and some literature, though getting in touch with someone directly is always preferable because, you know, you send a letter into a bureaucratic system and who knows what happens to it.
Right.
So I think that's just an obvious starting point. And again, as we've mentioned, you know, if we can be of any help in providing information about the kinds of things that we're doing, we're happy to do that. And then I would kind of defer to Wilvina and some of the others here who do, you know, standard PR kind of work like that to fill in with other ideas.
Okay.
Yeah, Wilvina, my experience, especially with the large bureaucracies, is a phone call first to find out exactly who the contact person and the direct email is, because especially in this world where people are inundated, and I'm also someone that really checks my email, and many times like it just like flies by. So when I call someone and I tell them what my purpose is and get the right person to talk to, because sometimes it might be the director, secretary to schedule a follow-up phone call or to get the right information, or it may be another gatekeeper that I then have to talk to. And then immediately after I talk to that person, ooh, I'll send the email right after I speak to them. Hey, it was a pleasure speaking to you. We want to follow up with an appointment or presentation. Here is our website. Here is some of our information. And then just really stay on top of the follow-up. Because once again, these people, like, they'll talk, they will remember you if they hear your voice and understand like what we're trying to do. And then when they see the email, sometimes they answer right away, sometimes they forget. And then you've got to follow back up and just re-articulate what you're trying to do with a presentation. They can do it a little more easily now virtually. But the other challenge with COVID is some of these big agencies, like our Department of Probation, they completely close that office. Okay. The case people are not seeing any of the parolees in person. The calls are getting forwarded home. Right. The time that they pick the phone up. But once again, it's like it is absolutely persistence with a smile and goodwill and just calling them back. But that's my experience with these government agencies. You just send some lone email that's going to end up in spam. That person might be not even the person on the website. They could have like switched positions or something like that. So you've got to call to find out exactly who it is, and then like really chat them up, you know, about the impaired, and mention what's going on in SoCal. Did you know that Southern California region has virtual parole? They would just be shocked. I think you guys are the only ones in the United States doing this, to my knowledge.
Well, I love that we're all having various successes in various areas. Like I know that in New Mexico, for example, I talked to Tom Kay, and they are doing virtual H&I panels in the prisons. And he told me recently he doesn't think they're ever even going to go back to in-person meetings, which I'm not sure is a good thing. But the prison is so happy with the virtual platform for H&I for them that they're doing it. Now, we haven't been able to make that breakthrough here in California, but we're doing a parole thing, right? Yeah. You know, and what Wavina's talking about follow-up reminds me of something that we, Dee and I, took out of our presentation. We anticipated, you know, we said something like, if you run into opposition or, you know, pushback at your region about a project like this, don't give up, keep at it. Remember, perseverance is a spiritual principle, but I kind of felt that was too preachy, so I took it out. But it is, and it applies to the follow-up, because what Wavina is saying, and she's like, you know, I come from an H&I background. Frankly, when the pandemic hit, all the jails and prison panels and most of the treatment centers, too, shut down. And, like, I was, you know, I'm a dedicated H&I warrior, and I wasn't able to do any of that. So when I had the opportunity to do this, it's very similar. I jumped at the chance, and I have to say, in over 16 years of very active service in Narcotics Anonymous, this is by far my favorite commitment. It's the best commitment I've ever had. I love it. It's just awesome. But yeah, so I would defer to the PR folks here about you know how to do that, and I think Wavina really laid it out for you.
All right. I want to add two other things. One is, you know, I love that Wilvina mentioned talking, like getting in touch with the director, because trying to get to someone at the top is really effective, because you get to someone in the middle and, you know, they don't have the authority or whatever. But I think there's also the opportunity to kind of work from, you know, from the top and the bottom. Like, yeah, if you have a member who's on parole, ask if you can get their parole agent's number and talk to the parole agent and say, hey, you know, we're doing this. Is there, who should we talk to? How can we make an in? You know, that kind of thing. At the same time, trying to, you know, make a contact at the top, so to speak. And the second thing is, with all the virtual work that we're doing now, you have access to PR trusted servants from around the world to partner with you to do like virtual presentations to folks at parole or corrections. So, you know, parole or corrections folks are, you know, hesitant, oh, we don't have time for a meeting, or we don't have a place, our offices are closed, whatever, you can offer to do it virtually. And then if you feel like you don't have the human resources within your area, you know, reach out. This whole
because that would be full of people. My area doesn't even have a PI committee. So I would just be going in as a lone wolf saying, hey guys, here is something that we may need to take a look at, and possibly trying to form a PI committee out of just that process.
Yeah.
Right. But like what Dee is saying is, you know, she or I or Lee or Kareem, I mean, any of our people that are involved in this project would be happy to join you and, you know, do the presentation with you. You know, you need to make the initial connection. And you know, another thing that, you know, that fits in with what Dee and Wilvina are saying, again, I'll mention Tom Kay, because something he said at that Northeast Zonal Forum I was at last year was, he said one of the most important things that he has found that works is finding your advocate on the inside. There's somebody in the parole department where you live that has a cousin or a sister or, you know, an aunt that got clean through in Narcotics Anonymous, and they know the program works. So they're going to be an advocate for you. I mean, not necessarily that specifically, but something like that. All these police departments and, you know, departments of correction, they all have people in them who have a connection one way or the other to Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay. Yvonne has a question.
Yeah, Yvonne has a question. Yvonne, you there?
Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Unmute yourself, Yvonne.
Hey, Yvonne Griff, Coven Drug Addict. I actually wanted to make a comment about the program. Awesome program. Thank you so much for giving us that information. But now I'm a former inmate as well, and I thank God for H&I because that's how I got my clean time in the institution. Also, what I noticed, and now that I house parolees and I have a reentry program, is that the parole officers are very confused in Alabama. I don't know about anywhere else. They are confused to the point that they think they have something down here in Alabama. It's a church program, and they call it something recovery. So yeah, what the inmates are doing, they ask their parole officers if they can go there instead of coming to NA. The parole officers don't know any better, so they don't know anything. They're like, yeah, sure, it's the word recovery. That's all they want to hear. And they allow them to go to that meeting, you know, instead of coming to NA. So my best target, I believe, is talking to the drug counselors that's in corrections, because they are the ones that informing them to continue their recovery through NA, you know, because when they get to the parole office, it's as if they don't know anything about, you know, NA. You know, they heard it, but they believe anything that has the last name recovery is recovery. You know, I've had to get them straight a couple of times. In fact, I think I talked to her about it one time about having a meeting with our parole officers, you know, and I talked to the head parole officer when I go up there, like, that is not recovery. So it's a lot of confusion with our parole officers that I've dealt with, knowing what's recovery and what's church.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and your idea of educating the counselors and the parole agents is important. It's also important, too, though, when we do that, that we don't criticize or judge other programs, because those church-based programs may not be what we believe works, but it does work for people. So, you know, we always want to just offer NA as a viable option that's available to people. So
one of the many routes that we take for recovery. Are you talking about Celebrate Recovery, Vaughn?
Yeah. Robert, I think Robert wants to say something. Go ahead. Can you unmute yourself, Robert?
Go ahead, Robert.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that. I'd like to thank everybody for the presentations that they've done today. It's been an outstanding presentation. I just got a question. My group, I'm kind of like old school, so to speak, and we talk about, you know, the clarity statement, right? We talk about being clean and not being sober, and like sometimes in our meetings, we are finding that a lot of people are coming in with the clean and sober thing. I'm wondering, am I doing wrong to correct those people?
Well, I'll jump in. Everyone's going to have their own response. My response is, if they're newcomers, we need to be gentle and welcoming and understanding. Or if they're real old timers that got clean before there were very many NA meetings, but they probably should not be using that language now. If you're doing it, this is just my opinion, okay? And maybe there's an official PR line that Dee or Wovina will share with you, but if you're doing it in a loving way and you're not fronting them off in front of everybody, if you're taking them aside and explaining to them the importance of Narcotics Anonymous literature, you know, that's a different thing than, you know, harshing on them during the meeting when they say those things. And if they're new, you know, they go to these treatment centers where, I don't know how a high percentage of our newcomers come from these days, you know, they don't know. They take them to AA, they take them to NA, they take them to CA, they take them all over the place. And they hear different, you know, it's all 12 step maybe, but it's different languages used in each of the fellowships. So, you know, they're going to hear all kinds of stuff. So that's my two cents.
Well, I would add, Robert, that I think it's really typical for many of us to be very language sensitive and wanting, you know, our NA language to be used in our meetings. And I agree with Jeff that, you know, we teach our new members through love and in one-on-one contact, not correcting them in the middle of a meeting. And the other thing I would just throw in is, you know, not that we don't respect and want to protect Narcotics Anonymous and our language, but this has been an issue since Narcotics Anonymous was formed. And we're still here and people are still getting clean, even though every now and then somebody, you know, says they're sober instead of clean. So, you know, for me, I just have to trust that, you know, there's a higher power at work in our fellowship and, you know, we're going to survive no matter what.
And these individuals, if they're new and they come in and they stick around because they are welcomed and made to feel a part of, if they stick around, it's going to become apparent. They're going to learn.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you, Robert. All right. That is the top of the hour. And we're going to take a quick break. I encourage everyone. I know you want to bail out. It's a Saturday and the sun is out and just hang in. John and I will not take that much more time, but John and I need to, as the delegates, to wrap this all up for you guys and put it on a nice package. To end it off. And so if you can just, we're going to take a quick 2-3 minute break. We're going to come back. We won't keep you long. And then everyone will enjoy the rest of their weekend. And again, I want to thank Jeff and Dee for being the designated hitter, coming in and wrapping it all up for today. You know, the way we started and, you know, we're leaving everyone with the seed of, this is a project that can help our region that we can do now. And they've laid it all out for us. If you look back at the presentation we had before this, examples of a project, what are the issues? What are the goals? What are the solutions? Characteristics of the project. What, who, when, how much, who monitor. In their presentation, they've given us all the information we need to make this a project and make it work. So be thinking about that during the break, or be thinking about that before the next region.
And Kelly, I sent you the format. And if there hadn't been enough questions to fill up the time, I was going to share the format that we use for our weekly meeting, but that wasn't necessary. But Kelly has it and you can get it from him, or you can email me and I'll get it to you. So you can actually see, you know, what our format looks like. It's 3 pages long. It's pretty, you know, detailed, but thank you for having us. And
thank you.
We're excited about Narcotics Anonymous always.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks everyone. Good to see familiar faces and names, and great to see some new names and faces.
And I'm wearing a Southern California shirt for you guys.
Nice. Wilvina, I made a note, and we'll speak to Tracy Harvey, who's our parole contact, and see if we can get some of that information. If we can, naturally, we will forward it to you.
All right, everybody, quick 2-3 minute break. We will start at 1:05, and John and I will wrap it up for everybody.
All right. Hey, Wilvina, I know we're off the record now, but I was trying. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so I was asking about, you know, that three mandated meeting that the guys have to go to, and do they have some kind of verification that they have?
Oh, you mean in New Jersey?
Yes. Do they have some kind of verification they have to take back that they did attend the meetings?
I believe they do. Yeah.
Because
that's New Jersey Drug Court, New Jersey Drug Court is different. In the sense that that program is a privately funded program, that they kind of got around, like And you guys might be familiar with it in California, like the DiStefano ruling. I don't know if that applies in California, but over here in the tri-state, in actually a lot of places in New York and Connecticut, DiStefano refers to a Supreme Court lawsuit where this guy decided that it was against his constitutional rights to be mandated to a faith-based program. It was originally an AA-inspired lawsuit by a guy in treatment. And so the problem is that NA got lumped up with that. And obviously we're not faith-based. And the onus on proving to these facilities and treatment that we're not faith-based, most of the time they've kind of skirted away from mandating us. The judges will only do it like intermittently. So, but that's the answer to that. New Jersey has found a loophole to get around that. They mandate their people. They've got a super big drug court program. And actually in some of the New Jersey meetings where they get inundated with court cards, some meetings will not sign those court cards. And, you know, I've seen a bunch of posts on social media in other states where they're also confused about the, you know, the affiliation cooperation aspect of the court card signing, you know, that groups can elect to do or not do.
And I was talking about the statistics, and as far as those that are mandated, what percentage, and you know, I know you don't have it, but the percentage of the ones that go to meetings 3 times a week, how many of those actually return back to the system?
You know what? I do have those statistics. I took a transcript of the drug court presenter. If you send me your email, I've got it on my phone. I'll just forward you that old transcript.
Okay.
Because the statistics do appear in that person's presentation, and I transcribed it for that reason. So I could just forward it to you.
Okay.
One more minute.
Well, Vina, if it's a Supreme Court case, a U.S. Supreme Court case, of course, naturally, it applies in California. And I think that the issue was, you know, that our references to our higher power so many times in our literature, and we are a spiritual program. But, you know, we all know atheists that are NA members, right? So that's a good argument to use. But it could be seen as anecdotal evidence. I don't know.
Well, in the 30 seconds I guess I have left, we did a presentation to the New York State Addiction Services people because they still kind of go by that. And we presented a whole bunch of our literature information. I don't know that it changed their policy, but
if you could give me a citation, or because I just did a little rough search on DiStefano, I didn't find anything. So if you could, I'd be interested. I mean, I am a licensed attorney, just parenthetically. So I have an interest in, you know, legal decisions affecting Narcotics Anonymous, among other
things. It probably depends how you spell DiStefano.
I know.
It's a DiStefano ruling. It is. You can totally Google that.
I tried. I didn't. Well, how do you spell it? DiStefano. Do you know?
It's D small E capital S.
T-E-T-A?
T-E.
D-E-S-T.
I think it's two Fs. DiStefano.
DiStefano. Maybe the two Fs.
Capital D, small E, capital S.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I can ask somebody at the office, they'll know.
And I know you guys need to get started back up again, but I think that the way that most parole or probation or whatever organizations deal with that is that they offer their clients several options. They might say, you need to do something about your substance abuse issue. Here's a list of 20 support groups that you can go to. And, you know, it's not, they don't, they might verbally like push toward AA or NA, but they offer the option. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you guys. Have a great weekend. Bye, guys.